following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Frank Cotolo. He just talks and 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 talks.
Saturday dance, miss the Saturday dance, miss the Saturday dance. Miss the Saturday dance, miss the Saturday dance. Miss the Saturday dance. Miss the Saturday dance.
Miss the Saturday dance.
Miss the Saturday dance.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more. And by a sleep, to say we end the heartache and a thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to, 'tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep, to sleep. Perchance to dream, aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death what dreams may come. When we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's a respect that makes calamity a so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the laws delayed, the insolence of office, and the spurns the patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin? Who would fathers bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death? The undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler's returns puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others we know not of. Thus, conscience does make cowards of us all. And thus, the native hue of resolution is sickled over with the pale cast of thought. An enterprise of great pitch and moment, in this regard, their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Soft you now, the fair Ophelia. Nymph, in thy horizons, be all my sins remembered.
That's a good toll over there, you know what I mean?
Thank you. the Bard of Broadcasting, me, Frank Cotolo, Cotolo Chronicles, the program that made internet broadcasting what it is today. Wake up, it's night. And I'll take you into the deep night, into the evening. The puppet master is here soon. Mr. Jim Moskowitz, the puppet master of internet radio. What a blast. Y2K plus 14 on the 14th. From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello, do we continue to go, to travel, to speak, to dream, perhaps, perchance? Ay, 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 huh? Oh, boy. Oh, boy, what a week. What a week. And what I thought it would be only apropos, because that's a great word to use, and I don't get to use it often, to play the Hamlet soliloquy as spoken by an alien. That's an alien voice. A voice of what? We don't know what. What is an alien voice? We don't know. But, you know, an imaginary alien voice. And now, wouldn't it be something, thought I, if the alien in that typical Area 51 close encounters shape of his head and everything, that thin, sinewy arms type alien, the kind of a template alien, the one looks like Paul in the movie Paul. Wouldn't it be something if the first thing they said to us, if something came down, whether it was that shape or not, and the first thing that was said to us was the Hamlet soliloquy, to be or not to be? That is the question. And of course, those of you who don't or aren't aware, and I know a lot of you are aware, but I guess it's only apropos to have played that particular Shakespearean monologue. It's a soliloquy. It's a monologue. Because it's about to be or not to be. A lot of people don't know, what the heck is this all about? My father used to say that. What's he talking about? He is, he isn't, he is, he isn't, he is, he isn't. to is or not to is, that is the question. I said, Dad, it's about killing yourself. It's about suicide. That's what it's about. To be, to live or not to live. And then the rest of it has a talk of death. And I thought it was odd because of this week. Not odd. Again, apropos to play that as opposed to just playing something else related, because related to Robin Williams, because in that soliloquy is the term What Dreams May Come. That's where that title of that movie, which starred Robin Williams and which was about his wife committing suicide and him having to find her in the afterlife to bring her back, from the author who brought you The Incredible Shrinking Man. See how it all comes together? I thought that was like the most apropos thing I could do. I'm not going to sit here and weave what short stories I have about Mr. Williams. I'm just going to leave you with that. Because on this show, Y2K plus 14, on the 14th, it's August, it's 14-14. In 14-14, we took a little trip. Didn't take any trips at all. We are going to take a trip. We're not going to be talking a lot about, or all about, the past. This isn't a reunion of sorts. I remember that thing and that guy. But we will be talking with Jim Moskowitz, who is the puppeteer of this show. And I might have talked about this many times, and I have written about it. I've done interviews about it. But Jim Moskowitz, who with his brother Chris started Ampcast.com many years ago, in our lifetime, of course, and who seduced me into doing this show and starting this show and being on the first live internet radio broadcasting team. I was the only talk show. Well, there was some talking before me, but not an actual show. And so what was created, Cthulhu Chronicles. And here we are. I mean, like thousands of years later. It's like, you know, lots and lots of years later. Ah, what dreams may come, huh? So, to be on or not to be on? That is the question. Apparently it is to be on. My name is Frank Cthulhu. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show, Cthulhu Chronicles. And I, you know, I don't always tell you this, but I know Jim will be doing this and replenishing his precious bodily fluids as you go along in this show. Wow, the things, you know, the things that other people, I like to have people on who have been somewhat involved with this show or been on it or what have you, like from way back. And it becomes extremely interesting to hear the things that they recall or the things that stick out. The things that are more 3D, although we're talking about listening, not visualizing. What would be three? No, we are talking about visualizing. We're not talking about visuals, we're talking about audios. Audios, not visuals. So, anyway, it's going to be great. We're going to come into it very shortly. Mr. Waskowitz, I think he's on his boat. I think he lives on a boat out there in Connecticut in the land of submarines. Yeah, submarines. Remember submarine race watching? Who would have? Let me see, show of hands. Anyone? No one. Well, in that event, in this event, in any event, in all events, and certainly those events, or whatever have you, welcome to the Hallelujah Trail, which began that, I don't even know the years. I'm sure Jim can take us back to that, but Jim is also I think he still keeps up with what's going on. These are guys who were working with the internet when nobody wanted the internet, Jim and Chris Waskowitz. These are guys who created platforms and who kept this show alive before we went to SRN1 and supported us as we were the first syndicated show on internet radio and stayed with us regardless of the fact that the big media came in and said, this is ours now, so get out. We're going to run commercials on everything you see. So in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, this is going to be fun. I haven't talked to Jim in a long time, and he's around. We've been in touch. He was on this show once or twice before, and we talked about other projects and things going on, but on the cutting edge. I don't know if he's still on the cutting edge, but let's find out shortly when Jim Waskowitz joins us here in the one and only Cthulhu Chronicles. In the meantime, there's this.
Juiced Talk Radio. It's juicy. JuicedTalk.com. Hear Frank Cthulhu's Cthulhu Chronicles.
Imagine if there were companies that made cookies. And they only got together to make like one, a certain amount of cookies for a certain amount of time, okay?
Transistor by Velvet Steel.
You know, you've got short nipples. Oh, yeah. You've got long nipples that stick up from the body. You've got big areolas. You've got small areolas. You've got different colors. You've got hair growing off them. You've got everything going on. You've got veiny nipples. You've got all kinds of different things. But for some people, they have really small nipples.
And the Fabulous D Show by me, the artist D.
You bring this out in me.
I know. And that's why this is so unique, because you could do a million of your own shows.
And I would never do this there, no.
Exactly. You'd never start saying, who did they suck off to get that?
All at Juiced Talk, archived for your listening pleasure. JuicedTalk.com.
Yeah? Who's that guy? When you talk classic literature,
him.
What names come to your mind?
What names come to mind?
These days, only one.
Me.
Frank Cthulhu.
That's me.
That's me.
It's him.
My new book, Molotov Memoirs, is rapidly becoming the classic of all classics.
It is.
How can you get your hands on this?
Come on.
Read it, absorb it, and make it part of your life?
You should.
Go to blurb.com. And just type in my name, Frank Cthulhu, and the fabulous book that's illustrated by T. Stephen Gessig and written by me, Frank Cthulhu, can be yours. Become a part of the classic literature generation.
Yes.
Get Molotov Memoirs at blurb.com today.
Come a long way, huh?
That come a long way, blurb.com. I want to mention again, ditto, that the electronic version, I guess, yeah, the electronic, well, they're all, I guess, it's made electronic. That's a funny thing to say, because it's made electronically. In any event, in all events, certainly this event, you can get it for your phone. You can read it on your phone, on your Kindle, on your Spindle, on your iPhone, and it's still, you know what's great about this book? A lot, I would say. I don't put out anything I don't thoroughly back and support and like, and I figure I'll share it. That's what it's all about there. Certainly not for the money. And if you all got together and bought, if everybody listening right now went later on and bought a copy of the digital version, I could pretty much, that would be very good. I mean, I'll pay taxes on it, but for gosh sakes, isn't it about time? You read Molotov Memoirs? Huh? What do I have to do? I have to come out with more books so that you can not buy those. It'll be good. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic. And then Juice Talk Radio, where you can get this show and other shows and download them and listen to them. But I also want to encourage you and emphasize that the CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, where you can go and, of course, find out the other stations that do play this. We're on many other stations. And we never thought we'd be on one station, but that station originally was the station called Ampcast.com. Ampcast.com? I'm not going to say it. Yes. Just when I thought, okay, you're not Jiggy Jaguars too much. I was on a show last week and last Thursday. We could go last Thursday, although if you're listening to this show out of order, no, you're out of order. If you're listening to the show out of order in terms of dates, and that happens a lot too because they run the show a lot, and there are a lot of these shows, but they run them here and there and everywhere. They don't run I'm saying last Thursday means nothing to you. But in this August, we got 7, 14, 21, 28. And we've taken care now of this as the second show. In August, you sunburned sickleman of August weary, we got two more. And I don't know who's going to be here next week. But we got another show Tom Savino's going to be on shortly. And then Tom Savino probably won't be on anymore because he's getting his own show. So, more about that as time ensues and we move along. So, we'll have next week and then the week after that. And then it's September already. And these few precious years I'll spend with you. No, I'm not wasting time. I'm trying to tell you that I don't waste time here. I mean, I don't, there's no filler. There's no time wasting. And when this show began, let me tell you a little bit about that. If you weren't here, and I know you probably weren't, most of you. And when this show began, and I was sitting on, I'm pointing to, you don't see it, but there's another part of the room where I sat there. And people said, what are you going to talk about for 2 hours? You're doing a what? A where? How do we listen to this? Oh, go away. And my Thursday nights have never been the same. I have only left this particular time period to do something else under two conditions. One of them was technical breakdown. Three conditions. No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. Here they are. Three conditions. One is technical breakdown. Two is I had a job or had to work somewhere else. And that, because you might have books, I had to go work somewhere else and I got money that way. And three, I don't do this for money, so you know that. And three, the other reason was sick illness. So there were a few times I was too ill to do it. I wasn't even here, and I could have done it from a hospital, but we didn't have the technical ability. Today, the speed of technical progress since I met Jim Waskowitz to now is just astronomical. You know that. This is the Hallelujah Trail. This is the sound of thunder, and it keeps moving along and rolling along. So why don't we get Jim Waskowitz from, I believe, maybe he's on his boat, and hopefully his Skype is going to be working terrifically, as I hear. Let's call him right now, and here he goes. Doop, 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 doop. Hey, where's the sound? Where's the doop, 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 doop? I don't hear it. Maybe it didn't connect. Hello? Mr. Waskowitz, why don't I hear you if you're on? It says you're on. Says you've been on for 13 seconds, 16 seconds, and I don't hear you. Well, here's a problem that Mr. Waskowitz, who created entire platforms of mute, my microphone is not muted. Your microphone may be muted, Jim Waskowitz. Is that you? Now, why are you seeing? Let me try and call him again. I'll hang up. I don't have any sound here for some reason. What's going on with my sound? It didn't go boop, boop. Something's wrong with my Skype, maybe. Let's see. Call. View. Conversation. Where's my sound? Maybe it's me. Let's see here. Microphone is on. Test microphone. Okay. Automatically adjust microphone settings. Okay. Check call quality guide. Speaker, webcam. No. Connection is good. Microphone is good. So where's the other? Where's the call? What is this test? I don't want to record it. Oh, look at that. Look what happens there. That's fun. Hello? Let's call Jim again. I heard that. Look, but it's not going doop, 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 boop, boop, boop. Okay, now let's see while you're on here, Jim, if I could help and find my settings, my options. Why don't I have a sound for my, where's my Skype sound? Where's my Skype sound? Where's my Skype sound? You know, I was wondering when I turned it on, it didn't go, it didn't make that sound. It didn't go, boop, boop, boop. Maybe I should, what do I have to do? Reconnect? Where do I go for sound? Anybody? Oh, listen to that. There's a feedback. Well, here's a lesson in, unless it is you. Is it your side, Jim Waskowitz? Is it water? Does it have to do with, are you in the center, in the middle of the ocean? My name is Frank Cotolo. The man's name Winter is the title of the show. Oh, was the call done? Where's the sound? I don't even know where to find sound on this. View sound? Do I have to call phones? No. Profile? Where's tools? Options. What are on options? Anybody know what's going on here with this? Okay, here. When, show profile. I want profile. Sound. Ringtone. Play the sound. Play that sound. Ringtone. Why doesn't it play? These aren't muted. Resuming call. Okay, answer. I'm answering the phone, Jim Waskowitz. Why can't I hear you? I wonder if I call it, let's see, we'll go back to sounds here. Audio settings. Speakers are okay. Volume, ringing, use selected ringer. Everybody's coming in here. Automatically adjust microphone settings, though. Speakers. Advanced options. Why aren't you coming through? Could be him. But why isn't anything coming through? What am I supposed to do? Call someone else? Here I am talking about technology. It's come so far since the beginning. Set up sound on your computer. It is set up. Can't you hear it's going through here? Speakers.
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Hey, that's you.
Hey.
What the heck is this all about? Isn't this amazing? 50 years in the fish business, and I still don't know how to swim.
Hey, I've had these problems before.
Look at that. There's a thing here. I don't know who turned that down. That's weird. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it keeps asking me for updates. Well, you know, look what happened. I found it. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
I'm always amazed at this because, as you remember, Mr. Waskowitz, in the beginning, yes. I was petrified to do any of this.
Well, so was I.
No. Well, say hello to, this is the puppeteer is here.
Hey, it's all great. Yeah, this is awesome.
Wow, could you imagine? Let's get over the amazement first. How many years? I'm still here.
Yeah, so am I. I'm just really amazed because I've always stayed in touch with a lot of the artists that were on Ampcast. Mm-hmm. I've stayed in touch with you, not necessarily like on a daily basis, right, but through Facebook and social media. So. But no, this is awesome. I kind of miss doing this stuff.
When,
we always had a great time.
We did have a great time. And I tell people a lot, when we're moving along here, how much it has changed in terms of being able to do things. How in the beginning, when there was just, because this started with broadband, right? We couldn't do this stuff without broadband, right?
No, you definitely needed broadband, no matter how you looked at it. And then once that was sort of available in select areas, then it started picking up a little bit of momentum, a little speed. And next thing you know, it's just, wow, what can we do now, you know?
But the only people who knew at the time, first of all, you had to have broadband to tune in, not just to broadcast it. So these are the main differences. And back then, we'd have a chat room, and that's the way people would come in. It was very difficult to hook up phones in those days.
Well, yeah, it was definitely difficult, but I think one of the requirements that I had at that time with Ampcast is if you wanted to do a radio station show, that was fine by me. Just, you know, a couple of rules to obey by, but put out one stream so that dial-up users could still tune in. They may not be able to sit in the chat room, but that's okay, you know.
Wasn't that like a 5-minute delay, though?
Well, obviously.
That was big. Those dial-ups were murder.
Oh God!
But I'm astounded every time I turn on this mic. I mean, I never want to do this show again when I'm done with it 1 week, and then the next week comes around and it's Thursday, and I just like roll into it. You know?
Well, that's the way you had to be. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, but you're educating people, you're helping people out, you're doing things that people appreciate. Hang on, I'm on my boat. Let me turn my.
Yeah, I knew it. He's on his boat.
Yeah, did you hear my VHF radio in the background?
Yes, just now I did.
Yeah, let me turn that off. Sorry. I do a lot of work on the water now. It's insane.
How has digital technology made its way into work on the water, whatever the hell work on the water may be that you're talking about?
Well, what I mean by work on the water is I do a lot of I move barges, I move people, I move
barges. I'm not laughing at you. That's just a funny thing. I couldn't even know where to start. If someone came to me and said, "Frank, we need you to move our barge." I couldn't budge your barge.
Well, you're playing. Okay.
No, really. How do you, your little boat? Well, I don't know. Maybe your boat's not so little.
I work for a company and we have what they call a universal tug barge. And so sometimes we have to move 200 tons of gravel. Sometimes we move boats.
Yeah. Well, there you
sometimes
go.
We pick boats up off the bottom of the water because they burnt down. Or they hit a rock, you know, because we also do salvage diving. So we have a nice, like 30-foot trailer, you know. Anywho.
they still make submarines up there?
Yes, they do.
Because I don't think a lot of people know that part of Connecticut is that's the submarine construction. What do you know? The submarine construction capital of the world, isn't it?
Yes, it's the submarine capital of the world. We still manufacture submarines over here, and there's a tremendous amount of pride in this area. When these boats, submarines come and go, there's just a huge amount of pride. If you go down to places like Virginia Beach and a submarine leaves, you know, you'll find a bunch of boats surrounding it because they're worried about somebody launching RPGs and missiles at it. Around here, It's the locals you have to be afraid of when a submarine leaves, because they will kill anybody that's going to try and harm one of our boats. So
that's funny. I had no idea that there were such loyal submarine fans, or that submarines meant so much. Well, that submarine fans meant so much. That's not being a fanatic. Submarines mean stuff for these people, right? If there were no submarines being built there, everyone would starve to death.
Well,
what?
I don't know that they starve to death.
What's so important about it?
If they stopped making submarines around here, we'd lose 10,000 jobs.
Oh, okay.
And then those 10,000 people are no longer here in the area, which means all the convenience stores, restaurants, sandwich shops, coffee shops would lose a tremendous amount of business. And so it's not just like 10,000 people got laid off or fired. you're literally killing off an entire district.
And an economic ripple effect that would
huge ripple. And then we've been building submarines here since the Nautilus. So this is a very prideful community over this.
I guess a lot of people don't realize, and I certainly don't realize, that submarines are constantly being made. I mean, they're being made at the rate that keeps this 10,000 people working. How many submarines do we make?
We used to make a lot of boomers. Used to sell T-shirts around here. It said 24 empty missile tubes, and it's Miller time. I don't know that you can agree with that, but
I can agree with anything. I don't really.
Then we used to make fast attacks, and then we started making 688s, which were high speed boats, and then we made now we're making a new class of boat called the Virginia class. Wow. And basically it's a compartmentalized submarine that has multi-purposes now. So they're mainly the submarines now, because we're really not into nuclear warfare anymore. Mm-hmm. We're into spying.
Right.
Technology.
So stealth is important. The stealth element is imperative here. Huh?
Right. So we can go park a submarine outside of Afghanistan and listen into cell phone conversations, this, that. I mean, years ago, a couple decades ago, we took a submarine over to one of the, we took a submarine over. We found an underwater communication cable with inside Russia, dove down, tapped into it, and we left a McDonald's hamburger wrapper on the cable, and it took the Russians a couple of years to figure out that we actually tapped into their phone lines. And they found a McDonald's.
So when McDonald's moved over there, it opened up stores over there. That's how they didn't know what that was before that. Is that
But that's how you say it's America, because who else would leave a McDonald's wrapper on the bottom of the ocean?
The French might. The French might, but they don't have any submarines. Do the French have submarines? Hey, there's another.
Yes, they do.
Hold on. There's another title for my book. Do the French have submarines? By Frank Catullo. Yeah, I'm still collecting these things. We'll get back to submarines, but let's talk about this. So many people who don't know the history of internet broadcasting. It's like second nature now, especially with mobile technology. And you guys, you and your brother Chris, and Chris is still in the digital arena, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He runs a company down in Manassas, Virginia, and he's doing pretty good at it. So I at that time, I couldn't move down there and give him a hand because of a certain situation, you know, my ex, if you will, and the kids, and it was just, I couldn't move out of the state.
So. Well, I'm still friends with him so I know he's on Facebook. I can't imagine any of you guys, I mean, we all of us predate Facebook. I always tell people, audience and listeners, I say, I think I was one of the first like 10 or 20,000 people on Facebook. I mean, I was like, I didn't even realize some of the things that were going on and where I was planting my feet. But the ways that we used to have to promote the fact that our shows existed and Amcast existed. And then remember we did the Amcastathon?
Yeah.
A telethon.
We did plenty of strange things.
A telethon. And that was the first time that internet radio was broadcast, I think, for like 2 or 3 days in a row, whatever we did. Amazing. Amazing firsts.
We did a lot of stuff. I was really aggravated with the entire music industry when it came to FM radio. And it's just like, why can't I do something with this? And they're like, well, we have this. And I'm like, well, stop with the freaking list. What you're trying to tell me is you're still doing payola, right? Yeah. No, that's been banned. Yeah, all right. So I gave him the middle finger. And actually, I worked for a radio station just to get into the, call it corporate espionage. I worked for a radio station to figure out what's really at the problem with this. And they just didn't want to work. And so I said, fine, you know what? I'm going to put on a radio show on the internet. Maybe it'll be for an hour a day, but I'm going to do it. And so Ampcast turned into that sort of platform. And I said, well, heck, while I'm at it, might as well record the darn show. Because if somebody misses it because, well, you're at work, you're at lunch, you want to hear it, you couldn't do it, then I'll record it, we'll send it up, and then you can listen to it later. And if you happen to be around to listen to the radio show, and if you wanted a question, if you wanted to ask a question, you could just go right to the chat room and talk about it. And people at this time just didn't really grasp that idea.
Not just that, but when you say... I don't think anybody here realizes it was not as easy to record and to keep or to download at that time either. I mean, if you had to record it, to play it, what were you using to record it? Was it Soundwave or something? How would you do that back then?
Well, I think the most common software at the time happened to be a company called Shoutcast.
Oh, okay. Shoutcast was, they're still around.
Yeah. They're still around. But when I first tried doing this, the only way we could do it was using QuickTime.
Yeah, QuickTime. Yeah.
Because okay. Microsoft was such a pain in the such a pain in the butt that we just couldn't get it accomplished. And the only way to do this was through QuickTime, and everybody had a problem with QuickTime. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, there's got to be a solution somewhere, so let's get to the bottom of this. And you remember Daryl from Palancar.
Yes, where is Daryl Palancar? He's disappeared from the general, he's off the grid?
I don't know if he's off the grid. I haven't been able to locate him, but it doesn't mean that he's not out there. But he was doing a lot of work, IT work. Between a lot of different states. And so Palancar said, well, I think I can do QuickTime and I'll do a radio show. But we got to the bottom of it. We found Shoutcast. And then what was great about Shoutcast was that we could actually get into radio listings on Shoutcast. Mm-hmm. So people, if you went to the Shoutcast server, hey, what's playing now? You know, you can go through a whole list, you know, and it was like, hey, so it's more advertisement for you who's supporting the website that we're supporting. And we just it all came together, and Daryl actually became a big part of that. And then not only to mention that, but yeah, we had everybody that was a great part, like Dennis Vanderwarp, Seven Greylands, Michael Bailey, and God, I still remember Michael Bailey to this day because he tested condoms on the freaking internet on a radio.
God, the things of the, you know, I had Seven on last year or something. He too was talking about, these prehistoric days. Cause wasn't he and a couple of other guys did like the first real kind of, they just put a mic in the middle of the room, got drunk and talked. And that was like, that's what was going on.
Well, I wouldn't call it that, you know, but I did, something had to be going on because these guys are having too much fun. And when you look at Seven Greylands, he came up with the what they called the doll.
Uh-huh.
And he took Palancar's words from his previous radio shows and put it all together, hodgepodged it to make him say things he didn't do. So it's kind of like a sock puppet. So it was just a blast.
Palancar. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and then you had people like, you had Seven, which you'd have to give the guy an award because he was really just musically inclined to put all this stuff together and just make a show out of everybody else's shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Jeff Straub, who's out of Texas, right?
Yeah, Jeff is on Facebook. He found me recently.
Yeah, and he was the most commercially accurate person. This guy came up with some incredible advertisement that just, like, threw you for a loop. And Mike Bailey just had all these off-the-wall shows. I mean, he was just a crazy guy. I mean, you didn't know what to expect when you listened to his show, but you always had to listen to it because it was always something just crazy.
Yeah.
So, and then Dennis Vanderwarp. Denny Van, who mm-hmm. had passed away about four years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, he passed away. He was a good friend. And I met him in Virginia That's another story I could go on for hours about. Almost the whole company actually drove down to Virginia to go. Anyhow, but, you know, he was a great guy. He did a lot of shows. If for some reason you couldn't do it that night, and we wanted to keep the schedule because now we had a following, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to keep the schedule, and Dennis Vanderwerp, it wouldn't matter, day or night, 24 hours a day, he would fill in if you had a problem. So, and I remember having a problem with Shoutcast because it wouldn't allow me to do a high bit rate. Actually, it wouldn't let me do two streams. It wouldn't let me do a stream for dial-up users, and it wouldn't let me do a stereo stream for the broadband users. So I used to do a broadband stream. Denny Van would pick it up and rebroadcast it to Ampcast for the low stream people.
The low stream people. A lot of them are still around. I got news for you. The low streamers.
believe it or not, they're still there.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's another story. That's because these are the kind of people that travel around the hotels. You know, because that's what their job warrants. And some hotels offer broadband, but they give you low bandwidth rates. And others don't even give you broadband or even a Wi-Fi connection. You have to use the damn phone. And who buys a computer anymore that comes with a phone jack on it?
Right. And then we're talking about everybody listening here with Jim Waskowitz. And we're talking about a time when if you didn't have your computer, this wasn't a mobile thing. You'd had to have a computer, sit and have a computer. But it wasn't even podcasting at the time. So we didn't have iPods or anything. You had to hear this stuff over the computer. And we were pretty much doing everything live.
Oh, we did everything. Yeah. Heck, we had our own advertising, and everybody came up with their own advertisements, their own promos, and we'd advocate over other people's shows.
You know what was great? Here's something I was really great when you talk about what you mentioned, Palancar. The thing that I remember the most is, as I said, I was reticent because I don't feel... I don't feel well versed in the technical side of things, and that was one of the things I kept telling you. I said, I don't know, how am I going to hook this thing up? It just sounded, it didn't sound anything. I mean, it was my perception of it was way beyond. But Palancar, who is, like you said, I mean, this guy's, I guess, compared to me with this stuff, is a genius. I mean, he just knows what to do. But here's what I really loved about it, was that he was able to explain things that even to this day, there's software and there's other pieces of digital things that come with instructions. And they think you know so much already. Their instructions are not clear, and all of my fears went right down the drain because Palancar, as brilliant as he was was able to explain this to me like A, B, C, D. Here's what you do. It's just this simple. It took all the fear out of me, and we were able to. I mean, I never had a glitch, which was amazing because I didn't know what I was doing.
I think I told you at the phone at one point, I was either going to put together a computer for you that was already set up to make this happen, or I was going to drive down to your house and make this happen. And I think we somewhere along the line, Daryl, you guys ended up exchanging phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how it actually really came to be because it really wasn't all that, you know, even if you were technically inclined, the software was still a pain in the butt. They just didn't refine it. It was just like, hey, you know, if you know how to do this and this and the command lines, like, okay, well, we're not using a command line, so how do I make this work? And so... we figured a way. We got you up and rolling. Everybody was happy.
We weren't dealing with gigs at that time either. I mean, to have like one gig, I wasn't. A lot of people weren't. Just your general. You didn't buy a machine that had like, what is it, 230 gigs? Unbelievable.
Not even. I mean, you were still buying computers that came with a maximum of 80 gig hard drive, and it's like, oh, this is cool.
I think it was even less than that at the time. I think it was even less than that.
Yeah, it probably was.
Yeah, it was a lot less. Yeah, yeah. Jim Moskowitz is with us. He's the puppeteer. He's the man who dragged me out of my out of retirement and put me on internet radio at a time when nobody cared about internet radio. Now, you know, I remember all the stuff. I was kind of very. We were very active in those days in terms, not politically, but I mean in terms of the internet, and we were always championing. We would always champion, you know, the individual and the fact that, that, you know, with the corporate, remember they wanted nothing to do with us back then.
Absolutely not.
I told the story many times of how, NPR, which has come to be known, and everyone who listens here knows it's a national pretentious radio, how they got all upset when we started running we hooked into their news. On the hour there. And they were going to sue. They were going nuts. They wanted nothing to do with this ridiculous thing that's going on there. And, horrible, horrible stuff. Today, they act like it's theirs. Like they created it. How do you feel about how this has come from the independent, people who are able to keep this thing, to start this thing?
Actually, that's what makes me the happiest is I'm very happy that this is still going on because I just was so thoroughly annoyed with the corporate machine. And I understand that, you know, people need to get paid, royalties need to go here and there. But, you know, something had to change. And so I'm really happy that I was a part of that. So nothing makes me happier than knowing that you're still doing this. I know that Jeff Straub, I think, is still doing a radio show. And, it really makes me happy about this. And I'm still in touch with a lot of people in the background that were a part of AmpCast. And I'm still talking to a bunch of those people. And it's just really fabulous because we developed a really strong community. And what was really great about that community is most of them were technically able. So we're able to do all this, pull all this together. I remember doing a couple of radio shows. I mean, one night I called mp3.com and talked to people over there. And I remember calling Riffage. I remember calling another company. Mm-hmm. I talked to Bobby Bensley. I put him on my radio show. I says, "Oh, Bobby, when are you guys going to do some live radio shows?" "Well, we're thinking about it." It was just,
yeah.
And then we just started talking about each other. We didn't even talk about the internet. We just said, "So what are you doing today?" "Well, this is what I did today." You know, but we laughed, smiled, had a good time over it. You know, it's just like, but that was the fun of this internet stuff. And that's what I really liked most about it was that we can just bring everybody together. We can have a good time. If you missed the show, you can come back, download it or replay it. You don't miss anything. It's a podcast. And nobody called it podcasting back then. It took Apple to come out with iTunes with an iPod.
It was the guy from VH1 or MP or MTV. What was his name? The guy who started the podcast. He coined the word and started. What was his name?
I don't remember because at the time I was just like, whatever, because I thought that they were just to eventually just change the name anyway. I thought it was a catch term.
Well, when it came out with the iPod, that's where the podcast thing came, originated. And I forgot his name. And of course, today, although, people are doing podcasts that are entirely commercial, ventures and they're not,
Oh, absolutely. You
know, more than radio. I mean, radio, look what we've done. I mean, we can take,
But we did.
Yes, we did. We can take credit for helping to destroy brick and mortar radio.
But we did.
We did.
Now when you look around, you can go download an application and tune in to radios across the country now. See, and that's all I wanted to do was I wanted to listen to my favorite radio station somewhere else that was outside of the terrestrial. Does anybody remember that term?
Outside of the terrestrial
range, you know. I couldn't do it. It's like, this is stupid. You know, why? It
also
makes no sense to me.
We destroyed, in a sense, the the whole concept of local radio. Radio always thrived for being local, and it's the only way it survives now, by doing local things. People still, you know, drive in the morning and drive at night, and you have your morning zoos, and you got your time and temp and traffic, right, which is all local, okay? So yes, we know that. That's the only thing keeping them going, because the rest of the time, they're hooked into, syndicated talk baboons, and all the stuff that's going on with that. There's no radios, no more personality.
Right. Right, they're doing what Ampcast was doing now. You know what they're doing is they have a web server set up, yeah, and they hit play because they have to play that. And so if you can get it online, you can get it online. But you know, some radio stations you still have to get it over the terrestrial. But it's all pre-programmed. Oh, we know what audience at this specific moment is going to be listening, so we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and it's like, okay, so you guys are good for background static. Now I got to tune into the internet because now I want something interesting. Okay, so you played some song from an artist. That's great. I've heard it 50 years ago. I'm still hearing it today. And boy, that's static. I want to hear something different, new, and I want to hear somebody tell me why I want to hear it. And this is where the internet radio still comes into play to this day. Mm-hmm. Because without it, you don't have this interjection. You don't have this compassion. You don't have somebody sitting there saying, hey, you know what this sound is? And they pull a tab off their beer and they're like, maybe it's a Pepsi or a bottle. But they're like, hey, have a beer while you're at home, you know? And that was the end of it. Not the end of it, but that's the attraction to me, was because every day was always different. Like, you'd be in a different mood and this and that. Whereas if you work for a radio station, you're expected to have certain language, certain things you can say, certain things you can do, songs you can't play, right, songs you can play. And on top of that, you have all these ads and commercials you have to play. Oh, and that leaves you no time to interact with the people that are listening to you. Oh, gee.
Yeah.
See, now that's the middle finger.
Format is gone, and they've tried so many different ways to deliver entertainment on radio, and because they just don't get the fact that people are walking around. Well, this is even before phones, when people had iPods, they would program their own crap. This is what I want to hear, in what order I want to hear it. And so everybody was a program director on their own. And then when the phones came and started getting popular, then what? People could go anywhere at any given time. And they can now go anywhere at any given time. So things are in constant competition with one another.
Yeah, but you know what I find disturbingly annoying,
what?
Is these companies like Verizon throttling back bandwidth. You know, went over, you know, 500 megabytes. So for every megabyte you go over, we're going to charge you like $50. So at the end of the month, we're going to give you $1,000 bill. And it's just like, really? You wanted me to get this content. Now I want it, and you won't give it to me. You know, the radio station will give it to me, but I need to go. I gotta surf all the time. It's just really ridiculous. You know, and these providers are. Now I lost track of what I was getting.
Well, yeah, no, I think you got a good point there, because, I mean, everybody felt. When the commercial brick and mortar world, the commercial world, the content industry, whatever it was they used to call it, when they saw that there was this other medium and they needed to get into it, they thought they could just bring all their tactics to make their money over here. And as you know, as I do, we all had your attitude when we went into this thing, which is like, wait a second, this is the information highway. We don't have to pay tolls here. We just give, we share, we do what we got to do, and we do it freely. And you know, they hurt a lot before they created things like iTunes. They created things where they can make any kind of money at all, and they're still not making money. But the providers all along, right? They're the ones who have been really profiting from all this stuff.
Well, but the providers have to make something because you have to pay employees.
We're not saying they shouldn't make a profit or what have you. But listen to what you were just talking about in terms of them going like, how can we make more money now that everybody has this? Right.
When you have your stuff out on multiple platforms, like if you're out on a radio station and you're getting royalties, if you can get your content into iTunes, if you can get your content into other providers, and if you just give a little bit away because you got to put that, put the worm on the hook, then if that's what gets you to make money, then let's do it, But when you're charged for it from a company such as, I'm sorry to use Verizon.
You can use Verizon. I don't care.
But they're latest in the news, aside from Comcast Help Center.
Yeah. A lot of people heard about that one. Huh?
Oh, I wish I owned YouTube and get the royalties off of that advertisement.
God.
But
God, YouTube, go ahead.
But it was just hilarious, But if you can get your material out in all sorts of different venues and avenues, then that just businessly, that just makes sense that you're there at some point. And Hollywood was so worried about when VHS and beta tapes came out that nobody would go to the movie theaters anymore. Well, they still do.
Mm-hmm.
when the FCC said, okay, we're going to let FM become available to broadcasters, all the AM broadcasters said, no, it's going to put the AM radio stations out of business. And it's like, no, it didn't.
But in order to survive, let me stop you right here. In order to survive, all of these providers of something had to adapt to digital technology because there was no way they could stay the way they were. It was move ahead or die. So when you talk about movies, I mean, there are still movies. There are not movie theaters like there used to be. The digital revolution has made an impact on that. That's terrific. And so many things have changed. But when you hear about movies, movies used to go on. A big hit movie used to go on for 2, 3, 4 weeks. These days, movies, which of course have been altered in the visual capacity because of digital technology, because they're bigger, but the theaters are smaller. And you've gone to a theater and you're like, there's five people in it for like one showing and 10 the next day to make all their money, and then. Other rights and things in terms of DVDs and licensing and stuff. That's all different. It's all different now. Those are the ripples that have gone into that. But I understand what you're saying about,
It's huge ripples. Because
tsunami.
These TVs that are 80 inches. So now we can have a theater in our house and make our own popcorn.
Yeah. It's a tsunami. It's not. These are not ripples.
But a good example of adaptation to this market is IBM. They went from making typewriters to what? Computers.
Yes, and wait, how about the film people who make film? How about Kodak and all them? How did they? What? This is what I'm saying. You can't look at one type of industry, product, or what have you that hasn't. That hasn't had to, for one reason or another, move into the platform that originally was, that we were doing back then.
Well, what's hilarious, what's hilarious about the filmmakers, Frank, is a lot of these people went back to encoding the film into digital and then taking black and white movies and colorizing them through the use of technology. And then some of these filmmakers were taking reels that you had to this day, some people are still doing it, but you have to put them in an oven and cook the tape.
Right. That's right. Cooking the tape, yeah.
You got to bake it, just so you can get the film apart to get the content off the damn thing. So, and that's a skill in itself. You just don't go down the street and buy a dehumidifier and humidor. And
yeah, but making new ones. For instance, I remember when I saw Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I was a couple of years old now, right?
Everything
goes so fast. And the first, you know, half hour that of that movie made me realize that it doesn't get any, it can't get any more realistic without just becoming surreal. Technology, the digital technology.
Right.
When you see what goes on, and they're using real things, they're not just like, you know, it's not one of these things where they create, you know, a raccoon's talking like in this other, you know, universe. You know, it's not cartoony. It's nothing. It's an actual, an actual town here in New York, which is being destroyed, and a church is coming down. None of this is real, and it's just fascinating to me. It's like, it doesn't get any better than this, because this is now realistic. And even when there were miniatures, you know, they still use miniatures and stuff here and there, but my kids look at, I tried to make them watch the original King Kong, and it's a joke to them.
Oh, it looks like a sock puppet.
This is like animation. This is, you know, it's like not, it's outrageous, and it's great, but there's nowhere else to go. Is
well,
there? I know I took this from the beginning. I know I went right to the end.
You had what? You had a 12-inch black and white TV. How could it not look real? Now you put it on a 50-inch big screen TV that you just parked in your freaking bathroom, which barely holds it on the side of the wall.
Now, wait a second. The King Kong played.
It looks.
Yeah, but the original King Kong played in major in theaters with big screens and stuff. So, you know, back then, that was fascinating to them that you could have this thing. They didn't go, it's a puppet. I mean, they saw this thing move in certain ways. That was the technology and the best the technology could give us. Yeah, today, it looks like you did it in a basement.
Yeah, well, you know, but things move on.
Actually, so not, because what you could do in the basement now, it's amazing what you could do. You see.
Yeah, look at Amazon. They started in a garage. Heck, I started in the basement of my house.
Right. A lot of people don't know. Ampcast it had this radio, live radio broadcasting, but Ampcast was an independent, what exactly was it called again? Music,
It was an online, what you would deem a online music,
I forgot what it was called.
OMD.
Yeah, an OMD, Online Music Distributor.
Distributor.
An OMD. And you guys were there. And then MP3.com came along, and everybody thought, all the independent people thought, well, this is it. And we're going to sell music, we're going to make our own music, and they had the technology now that, and now look at that. And that put, I mean, there's no more recording studios per se. And if there are, they're all digital.
I still know a few in New York City that still use 2-inch tape.
What? Who uses 2-inch tape?
I know a couple. They won't give up that analog because it has a certain character to it.
It does. And
it
does have a character to it. But I guess the point I'm trying to make, though, is that there are things you could do now on a computer. Now, for a while now, there were things you could do that you just, it would cost you thousands of dollars to go out and do at a
absolutely
studio. So people were doing that, and then these OMDs were all over the place after Amcast was. You guys were one of the first, or the first? Were you guys the first?
No, we were not the first. Actually, MP3.com was the first.
Did they really come out before? Okay, so they started first. Okay.
Yeah, they started first, but that's not what it gave my brother and I the idea to go ahead with
right.
Ampcast. We started Ampcast due to personal reasons. A very good friend of ours, still a very close friend of ours, had a band. And we used to tour around with them and set up and tear down. And right. We used to be the door bangers if something got out of control. And we'd be the party guys. We'd stand up on tables and throw beer and say, yeah, play it again. Mm-hmm. You know, we were the cheerleaders. And for some one other reason or another, this poor guy, poor friend of ours, who every venue in the city would just book, For some reason, we just couldn't get them into the major league people. And so we got frustrated with it. We looked at mp3.com and said, you know, they're doing a really bad job at it. So we can do something better. And we did.
You certainly did. And the thing that was great about, even though a lot of us were also on MP3, because we went to MP3.com first, but it was a factory. It was a meat grinding place. You guys gave OMDs, not just a face, but made it into a family. You could always talk to you guys. You never talked to Michael Roberts. Was that his name?
It's Michael Robertson.
You couldn't have these guys on the phone and talk to them about your problems or your thing, or I couldn't upload this, or can I do this, or what about this CD and what have you. And you guys were very appealing in that respect. Let me just do this hourly thing here. Jim Waskowitz is with us, and he's with us on the show that, I mean, I found the title, but for God's sake, he's the guy who dragged me out of this basement. Actually, and put me into the basement.
Put me back
into the basement, into another side of the basement with all this stuff I still have here. Hooked it up to my computer, and that's why you're listening to me every week. And now, you know, I'm on so many stations. They replay this thing, but I'm only on live on this one station. Because you guys were great when you guys folded. And you gave me the server for all that time. That was great until the SRN kids picked me up, and they've been absolutely terrific. People, stations are still. I just do a search every now and then. I find out I'm on the station. I don't even know. It's like, you know, they're still looking for content, and thanks to you. I didn't really want to do any of this in the beginning.
I don't know. I chased you down. I was like, man, I need this guy. I know he'd love it. He'll do it. I know he can do it.
He's
going to love it.
It was very weird, but it was very good. But we're here on Cotola Chronicles, which is not the Cotola Chronicles, because it's not about me. It's Cotola Chronicles. It's what I do. Chronicles is the verb. I am the subject, but I'm not the subject of the things we talk about. Also, you know, over the years, we broke some ground here, in terms of internet talk radio. I had Academy Award winners on here. I've had people.
Really?
Yes. We've had.
I missed it.
Yeah, you missed a lot. There's many years. Many years we've been on this. I can't even count anymore. And I was telling people earlier that there's only three reasons why I didn't sit here on a Thursday night live and do this. One of them was that something technical happened, or a storm came in and knocked out, you know, or something went on, or me went down. Number two was if I had to literally work somewhere else for money, and I would they'd run a repeat. One was ill and sick, because I almost died once through the run of the show, and they wouldn't hook me up in the hospital. I mean, they hooked me up, but they wouldn't hook up. Can I do my show? Do you have a laptop or something? No. So the only ways are sickness, through sickness and poorness, and you know, I've been married to this particular time period. Which I didn't even realize, having been in the media before, is a wonderful time period. This Thursday night, you know, remember when they decided to put football on again live on the weeknight? They picked Thursday night.
Go figure.
You know, it's like Thursday night, and this time slot is just incredible. So anyway, now in the beginning, listen to this. Well, it does. You know, it's amazing how much has happened over, you know, this amount of time. When you and Chris, I don't actually remember who told me, but word got out at mp3.com. was like, you should go over to Ampcast too. And you should go at Ampcast. It's like Ampcast. And that's because that's eventually, initially how we met was by getting a page on Ampcast.
And it was
terrific. But you guys, do you remember the names of some? I've forgotten some of the other ones. There were a lot of them, OMDs at the time. And they're all gone. They're all gone, aren't they? I mean, the SoundClick thing, I don't...
I think for the most part that they're all gone.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're still around, then I would think that they were picked up by somebody else, or... they were spawned by somebody else. I've known companies to start one company, and when that name fails, then what you do is economical sense, change the name, mm-hmm. keep the same product, and you can still keep your business going in that direction. I've seen that before. I don't know. I don't think any of them are really around. The one company that really sticks out in my mind is Riffage.
I don't remember Riffage as much as I don't remember the names of a lot of them.
Well, the only reason why I remember Riffage is because we did an expo in New York City. Uh-huh. It was New York Internet and Music and Internet Expo, and Riffage had a booth right next to us. What was really funny was my brother and I and the three other people, partners, we were all debating, oh, shit, we need a liquor license if we're going to give out a keg of beer. And so we're all pulling our wallets out and looking at our credit cards and saying, well, no, we're not going to do that. And Riffage actually showed up with a keg of beer.
Huh.
And those guys are really down to earth. We had a good time with those people.
It wasn't digital beer. It was actual beer. It wasn't virtual.
It was real beer. I mean,
not
they
virtual.
Were just
beer.
Literally giving beer out to everybody that came over to their booth.
Did you and Chris, when you saw this thing was rolling and you could actually do everything, when broadband came out and you would actually do broadcasting and stuff, and all the stuff was going on, did you guys have any idea? Did you go to sleep at night and go, "Wow, someday." This will happen and that will happen. And those things are now reflected in products and ways that that the digital platform has taken over. Do you guys think this would as fast?
We had no real idea what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. All we were just thinking was, you know, the technology's here. Nobody's doing it. Let's do it. We got it done. And it turned out it was a blast to do. At the New York Music and Internet Expo in New York City, at the New Yorker Hotel, we broadcasted all the live keynotes that transpired over the 3 years.
Who was that? Do you remember?
No, I'm going to have to look that up.
All right.
But we broadcasted all the keynotes, and the first day went like everything you could ever think of went wrong. And people are sending us hate and discontent mail like, well, we can see people, but we can't hear the audio. And what people don't realize is that we're in the New Yorker Hotel, and everybody in the New Yorker Hotel works for a union. So in other words, I'm not allowed to touch their soundboard just to plug like a quarter inch jack in just for the audio off of the 8 mics.
Mm.
Like, just give me an audio feed. Well, that took an act of Congress. In fact, it took all day for a union guy to show up and say, oh, what do you want to do? I said, I want audio off of your soundboard into my computer right here. And the guy says, oh, okay, click. But but if I did it, they were going to give me a $1,000 fine. They were going to take me off to jail. You know, and it's just like, are you kidding me? I got to wait. And I already gave you guys prior notice that we were going to do this. And they didn't have anybody lined up. So the first day, I got my butt chewed out and handed to me. But it didn't stop me. And the next day, everything went well. Third day, everything went well. So we were happy. We were happy. And then the other thing we did, too, was we put laptops in backpacks and hooked up cameras to the laptops. And we had Apple's airports, because we're still very avid Apple mm-hmm. fans. But mm-hmm. We had airports set up all through this hotel. And so we had these laptops, and we put them on a couple of people, and we went roaming around, and we advertised everybody at the expo. We weren't just, okay, it's all about Amcast. No, we went and advertised everybody. Like, hey, what do you do? What do you specialize in? And we just went down from one booth to another and talked to everybody and put them live on the internet. And it was a great time. Of course, we killed the internet.
Hey, right. But you had, who was your audience? There was a limited number of people who were able to tune into this stuff, and they were all geeks themselves. Wouldn't that be right?
But, Right, but we ran out of bandwidth.
Wow.
We couldn't get any more bandwidth, and we were just having a blast at this. It was great.
You know, this is just human nature, but, you know, we get used to things. We take so much for granted. And, you know, like me, I went as far into the instruction book as it took for me to be able to present what I need to present. And I didn't go beyond that. When you say things like bandwidth, I obviously know what you mean, but so many people hear this stuff and they have no idea now where did this stuff come from? Here's what I want to get at. When it wasn't Al Gore, but what happened that married digital technology and the internet? Where were you when that happened, and how did you guys find out about all this crap to be able to jump in so early?
No clue.
And this question was sculptured perfectly, my friends.
No clue. How would I know? I wouldn't have known.
Well, where did you grow? How did you get into this at all?
Well, I was a little kid. My father used to get these Heathkit magazines in the mail all the time. And one day I was like, oh, can we build a radio? My father says, well, I got one over there. One day we get a magazine in the mail and says, hey, build your own computer. I'm like, can we get that? My father said, well, the lawnmower's in the shed. I said, well, what am I going to do with that?
Papa Waskowitz was into this stuff?
No, he didn't know.
He just said, do you want to build a radio or a computer?
I said, can we get a radio? Yeah. My father said, no, I have one. I said, well, you know, so next month the magazine comes out and it has a computer in there. I said, well, can we get that? My father said, no.
Oh, okay.
But if you want to get it, the lawnmower's in the backyard.
Okay.
I said, what am I going to do with a lawnmower? My father said, well, why don't you go knocking on some doors and ask for George Washington? I said, okay. So I ended up mowing every yard on my dead-end street. I made $110, and I bought a computer. And
you
had
to build
it together myself.
Yeah, you had to put it. Did you have a knack for putting things together? I mean, I had a trouble making following instructions to make a, you know, plastic plane, an Aurora plant. If someone said to me, hey, look, it's only $110. You got it. Why don't you buy a computer? And I said, you know, I might as well try to build a ship to Mars in my backyard. I have no idea where does this come about? Your brother and you?
This came about. It might have been ingrained to me because my parents at the time had zero money. My father was going to college, and he had received permission from one of the professors that because he couldn't afford a babysitter, that as long as the kids were left in the back room, that it would be okay for him to go to class. Mm-hmm. And so the professors used to give me a freaking a telephone line, right? You know, like this 1.5-inch, 2-inch diameter telephone line.
Right.
Said, here, go play with this. Like, oh, okay. Hey, look at this funny thing. It's got a green screen with this yellow dot goes across it. Well, that was an oscilloscope. So it was great. You put, you know, one end on your finger, the other on your tongue, you know, watch the dock all over the place. I don't know, but that's what I did, you know.
So you're a victim of circumstance, you're telling me, right? But you
perhaps, you know.
But to want to buy a bunch of pieces to build a computer, you must have had an idea of why you would need a computer, what you would do with it. What were you thinking when you bought this kit?
Because I didn't like all the video games that these kids were buying, their parents were buying for the kids. Like, you had to put the little plastic screen over your TV so that you could play tennis. Remember? Yeah. You put this plastic screen over it and had all these little white lines on it.
Pong?
And it represented the boundaries, but the game didn't understand, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got tired of that, and I was like, oh, I can make something better than that. And I see this computer, and it was at the time, well, people would know it best today as the Timex Sinclair T1000. So I had bought that, and you had to put all the resistors and chips in there. and whatever. You had to do this, 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 that. You had to put it all together. And that's something I already understood, because that's what my father did. Because when he got home from college, he had to put all these projects together to prove to his professor that he knew how to arrange circuits and all this other stuff.
Well, that explains something. I mean, there's some influence there going on with your dad, so I understand that then.
Yeah, so I guess that's where I got it from, or my brother and I. It's not where I got it from, but it's just I understood it.
Yeah.
I probably understood it better than other people, but that's not what got me into the becoming an OMD and trying to change the world like Pinky and the Brain, that old cartoon.
But you had this you leaned toward this particular talent for putting stuff together. I mean, your understanding is, you're right, that's the foundation of it. So after this first computer, computers started getting better, and you said, hey, let's get some more, or let's build another one, or what? What happened?
No, I wanted one of those VIC-20s when they came out. I wanted one of those Commodore 128s, and that didn't really happen. And then my father came home one day with a Macintosh.
Whoa, he got one.
Yeah. So that really forever changed my brother and I, as a matter of fact. That just changed everything. The Mac was just so easy to use at the time. We were just in love with it. You just couldn't. After that, it was just like, all right, so what's next? We got tired of PowerPoint, or at the time, whatever, it was Mac, right? Okay, we did our homework. We put it on a 800K double-sided, double-density disk, brought it to school, and the teachers could only read a 400. Oh, okay, great. So my father outbought everybody. Nice. Go home with a different desk, bring her homework back. But that's as far as that went. You know, a couple of games were out. My brother and I were pretty much okay with that. But in our free time, we did stuff. We were more outdoor people. Like, let's go camping, let's go fishing, let's go boating.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do actual stuff. I'm interested in how this virtual, all this virtual stuff became such a part of your life that you were at that point, at that time, when things started to really, open up. Because that's when it did.
Right. When our best friend just couldn't get anywhere with his musical career, we just looked at each other like, this is just so stupid. Like, why can't we use this technology that we have now and make things different? You know, like, it's so easy to do it now. You can just actually just go start programming something and just make it happen. Because nobody else was really doing it. MP3.com was sloppy.
So it wasn't that easy. All you have to do is program this stuff and we'll do it. You know, that's what's great about it. You make it sound like, I mean, it's great that you noticed that, but you also had the ability to do that. Nobody else was doing it.
I've been doing it since I was 10 years old.
Well, that's what I mean. No one else was doing it. So you said to your friend there, and the music said, why don't we make this technology? Why don't we take this technology and do this? Well, that's, in a sense, revolutionary, isn't it? Because nobody was doing it.
Well, maybe. I mean, sure. Okay. I mean, that's how, the car came around, right? Hey, I got a wheel, I got a chain, I got a motor, and a gas tank. Yeah. How do I steer it? Oh, well, gee, we'll just do it. We'll actually put a little wood stick up here, and we'll steer it with a wood stick like we do sailboats.
These kind of people, though, are people who, I don't know these kind of people. I can't connect with these kind of people. I can only connect with these kind of people the way I connect with you. I don't, too, in my mind, in this body, in this mortal shell, be able to suddenly to go, you know what? If we put this rod here and that thing that is screwed to the thing, we'll have a common. I don't know. You know, there are people who don't know anything about that stuff. And there were people like you, you knew other people like you? You and your brother knew other people who were into this kind of stuff?
No.
No, okay, so there you go. No one was right. So they thought you were whacked out too, but you're doing this stuff, and that's what I mean. There are only certain amount of people. When if you go back to the beginning, and I don't know the stories, I just hear of them, when Jobs and the other guy and Gates were, they were in a garage somewhere figuring they could put together a computer right? I mean, there was, and when Apple
Steve
began.
Steve Jobs and Wozniak, right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those guys, they would, I don't know what the hell they were thinking, but nobody else, there weren't a lot of other garages. They weren't competing with other people trying to do this crap. In fact,
all they wanted to do was just make somebody else happy because they had a product that was already available. In fact, they didn't really invent anything.
Right.
All they did was took a piece here and a piece there and a piece here. And they just stuck it in a box, and it became popular.
The ability to make something, well, I know there's phenomena involved. We all know that in any of this stuff, phenomena is involved. But still, it's not like Jobs and Wozniak. These are not like these guys were. Little put it this way. It's not like they had a band and the other guy down the street has a band. You know, when everybody had bands, it was like, we all had bands, you know, and we got them the equipment and then, you know, the things and the stuff. Because you had bands, everybody had a band. But at the point you guys were doing that, or they were doing this, putting these things together in their garage, it wasn't like they were, the guy down the street's doing it and the guy in the next neighborhood's doing it. They didn't have anybody to confer with about to do any of this stuff. And you didn't have any friends who would come over and go, hey, why are you putting the integrated circuit on the clipboard when you can put the clip thing in a mother load and the mother load on the board? And, oh, yeah, right. Nobody's talking to you. You're doing this all by, you're doing this by flying by the seat of your pants, right?
Frank, you're killing me. But yeah, in a nutshell, you could go that route.
Well, you have to take credit for it. That's all I'm saying. I mean, this was not a popular thing. It's not like everybody was doing it. And people figure out how a phone works, a mobile phone, and they do it. And they're still kind of crazy if they're, you know, of a generation that had a lot of analog in their life. They still get a little annoyed and stuff, but they learn to do it and they accept. They have no idea what's going on beneath. I don't know what's going on.
No clue what's going on.
I don't know how the encoder.
They have no clue what they're being fed.
Yes.
You write stuff. You do a lot of poetry. You wrote some books, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
So, you know, that's a skill in itself, writing a book.
Right.
I mean, you have to take all these puzzles and kind of piece it together in such a coherent manner that people can just. Easy reading. They like it. They're intrigued. And, you know.
Even a person who's a writer can learn. I mean, you do have to have certain gifts, but you sure can learn more quickly to be a writer than to be some kind of innovator, to be able to work with something that doesn't exist. If I sit down and write a book, books have been written. Everybody's writing books. They've been written long before I knew a word. Okay, but when these guys are getting together and going, hey, let's put this into here and this into here and we'll make this thing that nobody knows what to call or what the heck is going on, that's a whole other story.
You're giving me more credit than I probably deserve.
You write a book, you have to give it a title, which means
you had to come up with an idea.
All right, we don't need to argue about who's more innovative.
I think everybody is innovative and creative in such a way that sometimes if you just take a step back from the picture and just look at all the pictures, you know, and then you can bring it all together and look at that one focal point that you have an idea in your head, you can definitely pursue it. You know, I see a lot of these younger kids, they're 20, they're 19, they don't want to go to college, they get a job. My poor girlfriend, she has to go, she worked for the past 2 weeks straight because everybody's calling out sick or they don't want to go to work because they got some stupid ailment or, oh, guess what, it looks like a good beach day, why do I have to go to work? Everybody else is paying for it, you know. And it's just these people, they just need to, if they just concentrate on something, they can do something really good. I'm sorry, I went off in a different direction.
Well, you know, yeah, concentrating, I understand the spirit of what you're talking about, and that certainly makes a lot of sense. And I lived my life like that. I just did. But I also, there along the way, you got to hope for a little luck, you got to hope for a little this, and the other thing, you know?
Yeah.
today, what do you think about people growing up with all of this technology as second nature, as opposed to what we do, you know, people who helped create it or people who had to switch from analog, you know, had to get acquainted to change platforms and stuff? What about the culture. What's going to change? What do you think? What's going to? Because now, remember, it's second nature to people to have a phone and have all this technology, not know a thing about. Just do this is part of our lives now. What are you saying?
I'm thinking all that's going to change the day that we can. I think NASA is going to play a big part in this.
NASA, didn't they play a big part in all this to begin with?
Yeah, no, well, yes, absolutely. But yeah, okay. I think NASA is going to...
How?
Because I think the day we put somebody on the moon and then we get a guy on Mars, that's all going to go... everything's going to skyrocket. The kids, the people, the generations are going to look at their phone and say, the technology in my phone put somebody on Mars. Where else? What else can we do? And I think that's going to re-inspire the entire nation. It's going to change the ecosystem. It's going to change the way kids grow up thinking about school and how important school is. And that's going to do, I'm pretty confident that that's going to drive the next technology drive.
Wow, that is, you're hearing this first here. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and boy, I'm chronicling now here, because Jim Waskowitz just opened up Pandora's box of predictions. Holy crap, we got to write that one down. You heard it right here first. This is amazing. Nobody has even brought this up. Nobody has even speculated the next change or the paradigm shift. You have just done that. Let's go over this again. Right now, NASA, we know this because we've heard about this. They're looking at all the problems that exist in getting people to Mars. Which is what? How many? You got how many months away is that?
You're talking 2 years? About 9 months to get there.
9 months to get there, which
and
means
then, well, you're and then you're also looking at other logistical problems because that's a whole lot of time to be in a car, if you will, and then you're looking at a whole other slew of problems because. Every 3 years or so is a good launch date to get to Mars because that's when Mars is closest to Earth. And then you have to look at getting them off the planet and getting them home without killing them.
And you're saying that the technology that will be that will surface from trying to solve the problems of getting to Mars, even if not get back, maybe the first. You know, maybe the first trip is you know, they're just volunteered. But, you know, this is already amazing, though. Go ahead.
It escapes me at the moment, but there is a company that's looking for volunteers for a one-way trip.
Yes, yes, that's what I had heard. But here, because we're putting the human element in here, it's different. A couple of weeks ago, I did a show on Pluto. I didn't do the show on Pluto. I was not on Pluto, okay? That's a bad sense. Some people think I am on Pluto, but we're a year away from the ship, the craft that was sent there. We're a year away from it taking the most incredible pictures, or getting, let's just say, data. We take pictures, and we're just saying it that. It's going to get all this data we never had before, and you're going to learn things about the planet, which is now no longer a planet, the most distant one. And when it's done receiving all that, getting that data, which it's going to send back here, I still have no idea how it's sent back here. I mean, I don't even get any idea how that's just unfathomable. I
can't, terrestrial.
Yeah. And, okay, so that can be done now. And then, this really blew the rest of my mind, whatever's left of it. They said, and once it's done collecting all that data and sending it back, it's just moving on. It's just going to keep going. And we might know there's some, what else is out there? This is holy crap. How can they see that far out? How can they collect data from that far out? But, so that's happening and available now. That technology is available now. But what you're saying is when we put humans into this picture, everything changes, and that is going to be the most amazing thing for the next, right? Because we're adding humans.
That's going to be the next drive because, you know, no kid wants to grow up pounding nails all day long putting together a house. And so they become lazy and complacent. And if you have something to look forward to, John F. Kennedy put this whole country in a I mean, it basically employed this whole country. 90% of this country had one thing or another to do to put the first man on the moon.
Mm.
Like, every piece of that rocket came from somebody, somewhere in this country had something to do with it.
And that's something a lot of people don't understand. Talk a little more about that. So you're saying what? There were screws in the thing that were what? Where?
Hey, screws. It doesn't even matter. Somebody in this country manufactured something for that rocket. When the shuttles were going up into space all the time before they retired the fleet, companies like General Dynamics were making parts for those shuttles. Even Electric Boat that makes submarines was making parts for the shuttles. So when now, all right, so we've been to the moon. Okay, we know all about it. Okay, fine. But now you're going to put somebody on a red planet that everybody likes to make these sci-fi movies after. We put somebody on that planet, it is going to change everything. People will say, I want to go there. I want to do this. I want to see more. I want more. I want more. I want more. Because we're now a real consumption population, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we sell tablets. Tablets aren't really productive platforms, they're just consumption devices. So,
right.
So yeah, we want more. So we're gonna. That's gonna drive this whole technology right into there.
Well, we gotta wait too, though. I mean, what are they? This is. Are we gonna live to see this?
This should be a little somewhere in the 2020s. I think we should be looking at getting somebody to Mars.
Wow.
But that's going to change a lot of things, though, because kids are going to be inspired. People are going to be invigorated to do something like, what can I do? You know, if you want to join NASA today, you know, you don't have to be a retired Air Force, you know, jet fighter pilot, you know, or active duty, for that matter. All you have to do is have a bachelor's degree in science and you can and apply at NASA to become an astronaut. That's all it takes, you know, and heck, when you look at it, this country, every tax dollar, less than one penny goes to NASA, and this will all change. So,
and what's going to be fascinating too? Who'd have thought when we started this show? I didn't think this afternoon we'd be talking about the trip to Mars, but.
Well,
this is also going to be like, what an adventure this is going to be. For 9 months, we're going to be hearing about. It's not like in the moon. Yeah. Right. That's going to be, in itself, is going to be an incredible swarm of drama and things.
But you know what's great, Frank?
What?
What are these poor people going to do on their way there and on their way back?
Oh, that's where I come in.
That's where we all come in.
That's
see?
Where I come in.
Some things just don't change. It's the delivery.
I'm going to, you know what? You've just opened up this whole thing. I think in my older age, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to NASA and say, look, these guys are going to need a moderator for all the entertainment and things they need from for the next 9 months. Why don't you pay me to put
it's
together?
It's going to be a lot longer than 9 months, Frank.
To get there? To get there.
Well, what are you going to do when you get there? Turn around and go back?
Well, no, I'm not going.
I'm going to stay.
No, I'm not going. I'm doing it from my basement. I'm doing it with technology. I'm going to talk to them. They're going to turn on, you know, the Catolatron. And it's time for the people from Mars are going to be hearing all about the thing, and I'll be telling them, and it'll be great.
But this is the beautiful thing about it. Boaters that cross the Atlantic and the Pacific all the time, they get on their ham radios and they contact the International Space Station because they're far away from land that the closest human being next to them is the darn space station 240 miles straight up.
Is that true that boaters talk to the space station people?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. I didn't know that. There's so much I don't. You see how little I know?
but I just find it really cool.
It is really cool. It's amazing. And
I'm 1,000 miles from the nearest frickin' piece of land, and I can look straight up and see that International Space Station fly over me. And he's only 240 miles away. I can get on my ham radio and just say, hey.
God, I'm like so primitive. Everything about me is so primitive. I see a plane. Me and my son went to work in New Jersey a couple of weeks ago to do some journalistic work. And we're driving and we're going up in the New Jersey Turnpike. And, you know, the planes come right over. They land. They just, you know, they come right over there. And I'm still, I'm driving along and I'm watching and looking at this plane. And I'm going, how the frick? Look at this. Isn't that beautiful? How the frick does it even, look at how heavy that, I can't take this car. I'm a caveman who's looking at a wheel and going, how would I not think? I would be the guy, I'd be the caveman who has the square thing, you know, and the guy next to me, you know, he figured out to make it round. I'm going, what did I think of that? If you just take the corners off, it'll move. How do you do that? So I'm still amazed at so many things. I'm like a kid who just who sees things that everybody knows about and becomes amazed. You know, children are that.
And, but that's what it takes.
Well, we still haven't done a thing. I haven't been inspired to do. I don't know what it's like to do a thing. You know, I gotta have people anyway. Jim Waskowitz is with us. And, you know, you have to be on more often. You have to come on and you have to come on at least every once in a while and tell us about these things and what's going on. What do you do daily or weekly or monthly to keep up with the world of technology? Is there a special magazine? Do you go online to read something? Do you talk to any people? What's your connection to what's going on?
Good question.
Does Chris tell you?
99% of my time on the water. Just different news venues. CNET. I like twit.tv.
Twit.tv? You don't even know about twit.tv. What is twit.tv?
Well, there used to be a show called Tech TV a long time ago, and you could only receive it at the time if you had DirecTV satellite.
Right.
And then they changed their name, whatever. So this guy, Leo Laporte, who actually I kind of enjoyed watching because he just made tech seem so simple to you.
Oh, he has a radio show, doesn't he, Leo Laporte? He's the tech guy?
Yeah.
He's the computer guy?
Yeah.
He's the male Kim Commando, right?
He's a radio station. He operates on terrestrial radio out of Paloma, California. Mm-hmm. But he started his own company, and he calls it This Week in Tech.
Okay.
So TWIT.TV.
Oh, I see.
Yep, and Leo Port. Now he has all these internet radio shows, and there's like Tech News Today, Tech News Tonight, then Before You Know or Try Before You Buy, and
oh, that's cool. What is that, twit.net, you said?
No, .tv.
Oh, twit.tv. What does TV stand for? I mean, com is commercial and net is now. What does TV stand for?
I forget. I use my computer all day. Oh, is that the thing you need an antenna for?
Twit, no. When TV is the tag, what does that mean? Transylvania? I thought it was Transylvania, like CA is Canada.
I was playing it out. That's what the .tv goes to. .ca is Canada, .eu is Europe, you know, I get all that, but I forget what .tv
is. So Leo Laporte, twit.tv is somewhere you go and you catch, he's up to date, he's on the cutting edge of everything that's going on.
Well, he reports it as he sees it.
Okay.
So when things happen, he just says, hey, you know, Google today screwed up. Okay, that's cool. You know, now I know about it. And just from knowing about it, I can gain a better understanding of why it happened and how it happened. And then it's kind of like reading a newspaper. I mean, most people never finish the last sentence in the entire article.
That's why when you learn journalism, you learn to put everything you possibly can in the first paragraph.
Right, because you're going to lose them.
You know, you always write from the top down, and the least important things are later. Yeah, because they don't read the whole article.
Right.
Same thing with with this.
And so it's just different venues. You know, CNET's one of them.
CNET?
CNET.
It's like Sea Hunt? No, C-N-E-T, not C, S-E-A, by the C. CNET.
C as in Charlie, yeah. N-E-T.
Dot. Is that a dot? .com. And they have a lot of news about.
Well, they do a lot of articles and reviews. Yeah. And then there are other places, MacNN, OS Rumors, Mac OS Rumors.
Wow, lots.
Well, you wouldn't even think Mac OS Rumors would be a place to get technology information from. But actually, those guys, they really have some deep roots somewhere. I don't even want to know because I fear the NSA. Oh, I should already fear the NSA.
How do you feel about the fact that what about cybercrime and people spying? What about the ability to reduce the privacy of a person's individual universe? Do you think that's is this danger to all of us? Should we care? Why should we care about this stuff? I mean, cybercrime, obviously. I mean, we've been hacked and stuff, and they can, you know, but why?
Well, I think there's a few ways to look at it. One, you should be very worried about it. But another reason to not be worried about it is, some guy wants to commit a robbery down the street. We have all these cameras in the streets. I noticed around here in New London, anyway, that cameras are starting to go up in intersections. Yeah. And now they're able to, hey, that 7-Eleven was robbed last night, and we're on the hunt looking for this guy, and here's a picture of him.
Yeah.
So now that means, you know, it's easier to catch the guy that's doing the crime, which means once we get him, you know, his buddies will be less likely, we would hope, to pursue the same avenue of...
And the resolution is so good now that it's not like you just have these cloudy figures, right? Resolution is becoming better and better and better, so you can actually see these people and then identify them from there. And then there's these databases which have... it's amazing. Is anybody not... I don't really care personally, what have you, but is anybody not in on a database somewhere? No, right? Everybody's connected.
It's almost impossible to not be. You'd have to be born in the frickin' sticks with no paper.
Yeah.
But even then, you still have to get documented at some point somewhere because nobody's going to take you for whatever reason, and then you can't get employed. People still manage that, I guess. But
what's the biggest downside right now of all this technology, in your opinion?
No one person should have that much information other than you.
So the privacy thing is the biggest, you're saying?
Yeah, it's an issue to me. It's an issue to me completely because the NSA, we obviously know, is always trying to get into our lives. But the NSA should have just talk to Google because Google knows more about it than anybody else. I don't like this privacy invasion stuff. It really kind of bothers me.
I don't understand how it totally affects me. That's why I'm not making a big deal over this stuff. What do I have that they would care about? Why would they? Nobody's using any of this stuff against people unless. Go ahead.
I just worry about like credit history, credit cards, or bank accounts, and way to get my money.
Yeah,
that's what I worry about.
But why would the NSA? I mean, the NSA would have they're not doing that. I mean, who's doing? I mean, that's cyber crime, right?
But I don't need to be profiled because I said something bad on a telephone conversation, and next thing you know, I'm being profiled. And then what do? I go to McDonald's and I'm talking on my phone. I said, you know, I'm going to shoot this schmuck because he still can't get my hamburger right. I don't need to get arrested because I look like a terrorist.
Yeah, but these things aren't happening.
Well, we don't know this, and that's what kind of makes me nerve-wracked.
So I'm saying things and I'm even joking around, they're taking everything seriously.
No, it's a possibility, but they're using technology. It's not like they have 100,000 people that are listening to 1,000 people trying to make sense of what they're saying, but they're using technology like, vocal recognition, voice recognition and going from there and they're looking for keywords, but you know, when you start putting a keyword here and a keyword there and another keyword, then you know, all of a sudden you come up with a sentence and now it's a paragraph. But does it really mean an intentive form of action? Or does it mean like we need not bother with this guy anymore? Can we just move on?
I'm just kind of, I look at it like I got a whole nother audience. All the people at the NSA who might be picking up my stuff, they recognize my voice. And then during the day, I know one of them is saying to the other one, you know what? I think it's time we replenish our precious bodily fluids, don't you?
Well, from every Bordeaux.
And they, I got another whole audience here. What are they going to, you know, I'm just passing on all this cult pop culture.
I don't think they personally listen in.
Right.
I'm pretty confident it's all software. But yeah. Software has to be programmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what kind of worries me, that the software probably is not where it should be at this day to be able to do that, even if we were to allow that.
And of course, we do have just the obvious thing, which is that all of this stuff, the old saying they used to say, well, it's a great weapon, but if it gets into the wrong hands, I mean, we have to worry about the wrong hands, right? Everywhere. Is that the deal? We have to worry about the wrong hands because there are people who just want to take things apart, and for whatever reason.
I love doing that. I love taking things apart.
So there.
I have no problem with doing that.
Yeah, but you're not. But are most of these hackers and these people, you think they're connected to cartels and organizations, or aren't there actually people out there who go, you know, it'd be great today, just as a challenge, if I could hack into Bank of America and screw them up for a day, and that's what they do? I mean, are there people just do that?
Well, I got to tell you, with all the bad experiences I've had with Bank of America, I would actually just endorse one of those people to go do it.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Bank. I let you Citibank. I hate them more. Are you listening, NSA? Frank hates Citibank. Let's put them on the...
Sometimes you like it, sometimes you hate it, but you're definitely going to hate it when it's aimed at you. And
right?
You did nothing wrong. That's what I fear.
Yeah, I guess, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Well, that's why I loved it when you posted that comment on Facebook.
Which one did that? Many.
I don't care about death as long as I'm not around. Or I don't care about dying just as long as I'm not around.
When it happens, yeah. Jim Waskowitz is with us, and he's heading out on his boat real soon again. And out there, you don't have anything, right? You just got a walkie-talkie. I mean, how do you talk to people? You don't have broad. Well, you could have.
Depends on how far offshore you go. But typically, I'm within 3 or 4 miles of the shore. And some days I play launch driver, where I shuttle a bunch of people back and forth to shore. Other days I tie up 600-foot tankers.
Wow.
Other days, I put oil booms around them. Other days, I get a phone call from an insurance company that says, hey, two boats burned down, and they sank underneath a dock somewhere at X and X location. Can you go get them for us?
Connecticut,
get a phone call that says, hey, I ran out of gas. Another guy calls and says, hey, I need a tow.
Wow, you got a whole series there. I mean that's like a TV series. You would, what would we call you? What do they call guys like you who just get in their boats and do all those chores? What are you called? Are you like,
I don't know,
rescuers? Rescue at sea? Are you the sea warriors? Are you sea warriors? Are you, what are you?
Just a maritime company
that does
what we do.
And Connecticut's still
wonderful. Yeah, people that weld, you know. Okay, what do they weld? Do they weld boats? Do they weld buildings together? This is just maritime stuff
that I
do.
It's second nature. The man is gills.
To me, it's second nature.
Yeah.
It's what I do. It relentlessly. I can do it. I mean, when Hurricane Sandy came through here, I got a phone call. Hey, what are you doing today? Oh, I'm just sitting on my boat, just checking things out. It's a little bouncy. Well, you want to go for a ride? Sure. So here comes a boat pulling up. We go driving around in Hurricane Sandy, rescuing boats that were breaking off their moorings.
Well, I still think that there's a series on this. There's a bunch of stories. There's something in it. Jim Waskowitz.
There's a bunch of stuff.
We were.
whatever. I'm not the most interesting person.
I don't agree with that. We're virtually connected. We're connected at the virtual hip. You and I, you brought me into this thing, and I'm sure glad we're still in touch. And I want you to come back again here and there and tell us all new stuff, and we'll follow this, what's happening in NASA and everything else, and we'll talk about some old friends who I think are still around here and there.
They're still around.
Well, some are missing. Where's Tori Chlumsky?
Now, I haven't been able to find her.
I lost completely. I was in touch with her for a while and then just disappeared.
Disappeared.
Some people have disappeared. I can't find Dub Demon. Where did Dub Demon go?
He's still around.
How come these guys aren't on Facebook or so? How did they disappear?
He's using a different name.
Well,
I can't remember what he's using.
Well, you find some of these people for me, and I want to know some of them. We'll find them.
I'll put a call out. We'll go from there. But I'm sure there's going to be a ton of people who are going to come to the surface, because I'm friends with quite a few of them. And between you and I, we should be able to get the whole freaking colossal together.
Well, that'd be great. That would be terrific. The puppeteer, gentlemen, ladies, and comrades, Jim Waskowitz, out to sea with you now. And thank you so much for being here again and getting your Skype hooked up. It's wonderful, your Skype. It's so much better than phones. Phones suck.
Oh, I agree. I agree with the phone thing. But I've always had problems with Skype in the past. And that's why I'm really sketchy with it.
Well, you're fine now. You're fine now. It's fine now. It's good.
I'm glad it's working, because I was really, I don't know. With all the problems I've had with it in the past, I was just really, I was like, Skype, huh? Really? Okay. So I pushed the download button, here we are.
Stay afloat. Good fishing to you. Stay afloat. Right, good fishing. Thanks again, and we shall be in touch one way or another, okay?
I hope so. We need to talk off the radio.
We will
do
that.
I have some other things I have doing. So.
Good. I have your number. We'll talk.
All right. Sounds like a plan, Frank.
Mr. Waskowitz, the big W, people on Cthulhu Chronicles. Thanks, and good night to Mr. Waskowitz, wherever you are now.
Oh, you're London, Connecticut. Take care, Frank.
Take care, bud.
We'll talk to you again, and everybody else that's listening, go ahead and kill me.
No, you'll be fine. Good night.
I'm used to it. All right, Frank. Take care, man.
J.W. Jim Waskowitz, the puppeteer, the man who there would be no Cthulhu Chronicles. That may mean nothing to you, but it's fascinating to me. It's still good, and I think it's wonderful that we have it, and he's still going around. We're going to do a lot more stuff with him over the next year. Hopefully we're all safe and sound, and we're all, what are we? We're safe and sound, and we're well. We're well. And it's Cthulhu Chronicles. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show, Frank Cthulhu, here chronicling for you. And what do you know? It's that time again to hit the button and click it off and just get going, you know? Do the French have submarines? Oh, the title book is getting bigger. Yes, my name is Frank Cthulhu, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. We shall be back again, hopefully, on the 21st. CthulhuChronicles.blogspot.com. Come visit me. Be my friend on Facebook. I think we're allowed a certain amount of friends. I'm getting close to there, so come on up there. Go get the books. Buy the books. Go to Blurb. Go to Lulu. Go all over the place. And we'll be back with whatever we're going to do next time. Until then, be happy, be sad, compare them both, and enjoy it all. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be located on this evening or this afternoon. Go support all the stations who continually play this show in rerun. SRM Media Works, we love you guys. I guess, what are you going to say when you talk to Jim? You've said it all, right? And I'll leave you now, because I have nothing more to say.